So you have to be willing, I think, as a person to grow. If you're stuck in your life, you know, you have to look at these patterns of your life and say, what am I doing again and again and again and again that is providing the same result? What can I do differently? How can I break up this straightforward path I'm on? And you have to step outside the boundaries of your comfort zone and try things. And yes, the results are unknown.
Hey, midlifers, welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostess. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone. Until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Hi, I'm Wendy Valentine, host of the Midlife Makeover Show. Today, I want to share something personal with you. At 45, my world turned upside down. I was going through a divorce, battling depression, grieving the loss of my brother, and dealing with chronic illness. But I want to tell you about a turning point in my journey, therapy. Speaking to a therapist was a lifeline for me. It was a safe space where I could express my pain and start to find my way back to joy and hope. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce today's sponsor, BetterHelp, the world's largest therapy service. BetterHelp offers professional licensed therapists who are available online at your convenience. You can message your therapist anytime or schedule live sessions via video, phone, or chat. I believe in the power of therapy because it helped me navigate the toughest times of my life. If you're going through a tough time or just need someone to talk to, I encourage you to try BetterHelp. As a listener of the Midlife Makeover Show, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/midlife or choose the Midlife Makeover Show during signup. Welcome back to the Midlife Makeover Show. I'm Wendy Valentine, and today's guest is someone who knows a thing or two about transformation, both on stage and in life. You may recognize him as the powerful voice behind the legendary metal band Lamb of God. But there's so much more to D. Randall Blythe than just his music. He's a writer, photographer, actor, and a deep thinker who isn't afraid to tackle life's biggest questions. In his latest memoir, Just Beyond the Light, he shares his journey of self-discovery, sobriety, creativity, and resilience, blending raw honesty with sharp wit and unexpected humor. So funny. We'll dive into his reflections on life, loss, and purpose. Plus, we'll explore his unique approach to staying grounded, whether through writing, surfing, or simply facing reality head on. Get ready for an enlightening, inspiring conversation with a true creative force. Please welcome D. Randall Blythe to the show.
Hello, everybody. Yay. We're all here together. It feels so nice and cuddly.
A big, happy family.
There you go.
So great to have you here. You're probably wondering, like, when this came up on your schedule, like, the Midlife Makeover Show. What the hell is this?
Why? Well, no, not really, because I'm...
You are a midlife makeover.
I am a midlife makeover. I firmly fit the category.
And you slayed it, I must say.
Yeah, man.
You slayed it. I have two wonderful birthdays to announce. Number one, today is the birth of your book baby.
Thank you. Yay, I'm very proud. So, it's not a beautiful baby, but I love it.
I forgot to ask you, should I call you Randall, Randy?
Randy. Most everybody calls
Randy.
Me Randy.
Okay. Yeah.
D. Randall Blythe is my professional name because my parents named me David Randall. but they don't call me either. And I'm asking them, like,
you know, what the hell?
And then my dad is like, yeah, but D. Randall Bly will be a nice professional name for you one day. And this was when I was in the fifth grade. And I was like, you're right. So that's what I put on my books, and I'm credited on records.
It's almost like the J.K. Rowling, right? Like, it's like a classic author's name, D. Randall Blythe.
I'm trying to be a classic.
So happy birthday to your book.
Thank you.
That comes out today. As soon as we get done running our mouths, y'all need to go buy the book. We're going to dive into the book in a minute. And then the other birthday is, your birthday is on the 21st.
It is.
Happy birthday. I'd sing to you. I can't. You can sing. I can't sing for sure.
I can. But thank you very much. I appreciate it. Turning 54.
54. And I'm 50. Yeah. 50s rock.
Yeah. They're great.
You know?
I'm just glad I'm here.
That's true.
I'm just glad I'm here, man. Every day, the way I lived my life for so long, I should be dead. And so, you know, we never know when the Reaper's going to come for us. So for me, I'm in overtime. The game is in overtime. Yeah. Every day is a bonus, you know? So
I love it. You know, I was telling you that last night, and I get a ton of authors on the show, and I don't always get to read their books. I try my best. I go through them. But last night I read your book cover to cover, or I should say from PDF, front of the PDF to the bottom of the PDF.
Lovely.
Loved it. And
thank
I loved, I feel like, here's the thing. I feel like not only did I learn more about you, I actually learned more about myself.
Right. Well, that is wonderful to hear, because the book, we talked a little bit before it, like, I know the book will be firmly shelved on the music section in bookstores, because I'm a well-known musician within our genre. So, and my ego kicks against that, you know, it really does. It's like, it's not a book about heavy metal. It shouldn't be but then I'm like, you know, there are aspects to music for it. And dude, you've been in this band for 30 years. So like, stop crying, stop being a little baby, and just be glad your book is on the shelf, period. No matter what section it goes in. But as I said, we were talking about it. It's not a self-help book, because I don't claim to have answers for anyone for anything, because for me, life is a daily process of discovery. I feel like I have to constantly keep growing. I have to stay green, because as soon as I stop growing, I stop staying green, and that's when I start dying. And we're all dying physically day by day from the second we're born. But for me, mentally, I want to grow until the day I die, whenever that comes. So the book for me it's not a self-help book. The main thing I wanted out of it, though, and a friend of mine, can we cuss on this? I have to cuss.
Fuck yes, you can.
Okay, cool. I have to cuss in order to say the title of this next book. my friend, Mark Manson, wrote a book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which the title of
he endorsed your book.
Yes.
Yes.
Because the title of that book comes from a Lamb of God song.
Shut up.
No. Yeah. It's called The Subtle Arts of Murder and Persuasion is our song. And he took that because he's a Lamb of God fan and has been for years. So I found that out through, I think, like a Tim Ferriss podcast or something. And I'm like, holy shit. And I hit him up. I'm like, dude, because it's a bazillion selling book. And I'm like, maybe you'll check out my new book. Maybe do me a solid since our song title gave you an 8 million. Great dude. But he asked me a question when I was trying to come up with like subtitles, and he is one of these weird people, and he admits it, that actually enjoys marketing and figuring out that stuff. And I hate it. You know, I am not a marketing guy. I'm a caveman. I'm in a heavy metal band. But he was asking me, he's like, what is, when we were thinking about the subtitle and marketing and stuff, he's like, what is the thing? What is the question you want the reader to take away from the book? What is the number one thing? And I was like, what? And I thought about it and I was like, the thing I really would like for the reader to take away from the book is not an answer, but a question. And that question is to ask themselves, what tools do I have at my disposal right here, right now, no matter where I am in life, that I can use to not only improve my own situation, but maybe even make the world a better place in the process, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So for me, for you to say that you read the book and it made you, I suppose, think about yourself,
yep,
automatically makes me feel like a success, because that's what I wanted to do, you know, just have people think like, wow, how does this relate to my experience?
Yeah, I was fired up when I woke up this morning.
Yay!
Yeah, yeah, several ahas. My favorite line of the book was, here it is, let's see if I can remember it. Inside the car, it was so quiet, you could hear a mosquito fart.
Yes.
That goes to grandma.
That's pretty. That's
into the tree.
That's some Southern stuff. That's a story. There's a whole chapter about my grandmother who lived to be 100 and a half years old. And she was
100 and a half. Oh, my God.
Yeah. She almost made it to 101. But she lived to be 100 and a half years old. She was raised during the Depression. And, I lived with her for a little bit when I was a child, when my parents split up. And I learned a lot from her, a lot of stuff that I didn't internalize at the time, you know, because I'm like, you're an old woman telling me this and that, the other. But she had a really profound effect on my life. So I wrote this chapter about her and the things that I learned from her. And she's dead. So this is not a spoiler alert. We've already discussed that. She's 100 and a half. I was right beside her when she died, which was incredibly important to me that, if not me, someone from my family was with her so that she knew she wasn't alone.
Love what you said, actually. Oh, go ahead.
My grandmother was not a cuddly, sweet, get away with anything grandma. Yeah. I love those grandmas. They're awesome, you know, but that wasn't my grandma. And so me and my brothers drove her crazy. And the story you're referring to is we drove her so crazy one day that she wrecked her car into a tree. We were driving her so nuts.
She lost her shit and she needed
to. She totally lost her shit. Maybe some people are horrified that.
I was actually thinking,
it's hilarious.
I know. The title of your next book should be, well, go do shit.
That's go do like, shit.
Because that's when she, go do shit.
Go do shit. That's, she gets so mad. That was her only cuss word. And I tell about it in the story. We would start driving her crazy and she would say, Southern woman. So she'd go, gone, which is Southern for, we'll go on, get the hell out of here.
Gone. Yeah. Gone.
And gone. Like, me and my brothers do that all the time. But when she was really lost, because she, church going woman, you know, like didn't cuss. But when we drove her over the edge, she would say her one cuss word, which was shit. And she'd be
shit.
Ironically, it's also my mom's one cuss word. Who is like, this was my father's mother, but it's my mom's one cuss word, which is shit as well. But she doesn't say that. She sounds like someone has like popped a tire on a bicycle when she cusses, because it goes,
shit.
It takes a while to come out.
You almost like want to finish it for her. Like, let me just
say it. Shit, just say it. You know?
Yeah, no. So the one thing I really got out of that chapter, this is from your grandma. I really don't think people are as close as they used to be. Community used to be really close. People don't come and visit like they used to. And going back to what you were saying, you were there with her when she passed away. And I mean, isn't that, and I think the point of like that whole thing was not just being with someone when they pass, but then also connecting with people again. Like we don't do it anymore. Like it's sad that we've lost so much connection just with the phone. Like we should be more connected, but really not.
Right. I think that the, see, obviously, I am not a Luddite. I am not anti-technology. I'm talking to you from New York City. We can see each other in this magic device, you know, called a computer. And now we all carry these little tiny computers around in our pocket that are millions of times more powerful than the ones that guided our first space missions. You know, people went to the moon using computers the size of this hotel room. And we have ones that are bazillions of times more powerful. So the technology is good for us being able to talk. And I love talking to my friends overseas. I can FaceTime my friends in Japan or Finland or whatever. And it's amazing and it's great. However, it is a, it should be used as a supplement to real human interaction, you know, because there is empathy and nuance and all that stuff gets lost when you're not, you know, pheromones, it all gets lost when you're not face to face. And you can, you unconsciously are constantly evaluating someone's body language and seeing how they're carrying themselves. And that will give you real clues as to their emotional state and therefore how you should interface with this person face to face. So this, like I said, this technology is great, but it is a digital representation of real life. And I think people have come to rely on it too much. Oh, I have lots of friends on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook or whatever. I'm like, really? Are those friends going to come help you when you blow a flat on the side of the road on your car and you don't have a spare and you need them to go to the store to get one? You know, are they going to do that for you? Your 800 friends all over the world? No.
You had said something too in one of the chapters about like, would you walk down the street and be like, hey, you need to lose some weight and I can help you? And
it's crazy.
Why is it okay on social media to say these things to people?
Guess what? Guess what? It's not.
I know.
It's not okay.
I know.
Right? Not if you want to. God, particularly with regards to, I think, the way women can be treated on social media.
Yes. Oh, I get it all the time. I especially get
it. You're like, I'm not hitting on you. You're a pretty lady, right?
Thank you. Yes. I get
that is a compliment, but I'm sure people have said some fucked up things to you. And it's like
all the time. But you know what, though? I feel like, and thanks to the subtle art of not giving a fuck, I don't give a fuck. I feel like for me, especially.
But that doesn't mean it's okay.
I know. It's not okay. I know. Okay. I know. It's tough. But I feel like for me, almost like a Teflon pan, right? I just like slides right off of me. I'm like, whatevs, detached. Right. Don't care, like, you poor thing, for you to actually say something like that to people or to behave that way, there's something not right.
Right. It's, to me, the internet and the interactions with men and women that I've seen and with many women friends of mine who are public figures, you know, who are musicians or whatever, social media, like, these comments from dudes, these foul comments and stuff, they are the online equivalent of, let's say we go out to a bar, you're at the bar and some guy walks up to you and he's like, nice ass, baby.
Yeah.
Right. No. Like, does that ever,
about, I want to be your sugar daddy. I want all your, I want to take your bills. First of all, you don't want my bills.
Yeah. But like, it's like, does that ever fucking work? Like these moron dudes, it's like that, like what, that doesn't work in real life. Why do you think it would work on the internet? And why do you think that your little bitch ass is entitled to say something like that, you know, without getting fucking punched in the face? Cause it's not real world.
And it's challenging for us, right? Here we're writers, we're speakers, we're doing our thing. It's part of who we are and our creativity. And unfortunately, we have to be connected with all of this.
Right.
I don't know. I look at it like, all right, it's another platform for me to get a message out. Take it or leave it. Don't care. Yeah. Like it, don't like it, whatever. I mean, just the same as the podcast, right? Some people are going to like it. So, I mean, now they're really going to like it just because you're here. Yeah. No, just kidding.
We'll see. We'll see. Right, they might really dislike it.
I'm like, oh, great. Oh. So, yeah, your grandma, very, very amazing woman, I can tell.
Yeah, she was tough, man. She was tough. She's raising her during the Depression. And the thing that in that chapter, you know, I wrote it in the chapter is like when I was whining and complaining as little kids do, you know, about, oh, this is tough or I don't want to do that. Whatever she wanted me to do, probably go pick corn in the garden because corn is itchy. It sucks going to pick corn. But, you know, she would be like, I'd be complaining. She goes, you don't know what hard times are. You don't know what hard times are. And I was
we're
a kid.
Spoiled nowadays. We are.
So yeah. Yeah. I was a kid and I was like, whatever, grandma. But then I learned as I grew up about like the Depression and the economic circumstances of everyone going on. And then, you know, I as I grew older, I internalized that. And I'm like, you're right. I don't know what hard times are. You do. Yeah. You're a hard woman. She was hard.
Yeah. You know? It brought me back. Like, I loved how you kind of described just being there with her. And then your advice, you had even said, let them know that you are there, that they are not alone, and that you will not leave them. Quietly fill the room with your support and love. Be patient, be kind, be present, sit and wait. You will not regret it. And that actually brought tears to my eyes.
I cried my eyes out writing that because it made me think, you know, and I miss my grandma very much, but like she was ready to go. She was 100 and a half, you know, it's like time to check out, dudes. Like I've had enough. And I'm like, so I wasn't, when she died, I did not feel this overwhelming sadness at all because she had lived this long life and had been through so much and it had been such a good person. But the last few years of her life were rough, you know, because her body just wouldn't quit. It's like she was built like a tank.
She just kept going and going. Yeah.
So, my friend Jamie, he sings for a band called Hatebreed. Dear friend of mine. And he and both our grandmas are gone now, but we would send each other pictures of our grandma and his past first. And, you know, when I told him my grandma died, I was telling him, you know, I'm right there. I'm with her. And it meant a lot to him because he was always seeing his grandma. And he's like, I think people today in our society, they don't want to deal with death. They don't want to face death. They don't want to see that it's coming. And that's criminal. You know, if it's your old people, you better be there. It's like, you need to be there. That's when it's most important. And it used to be different. I had another friend named Morris Frank, right? Who was a sober guy I got to know. And he actually had he got sober on the same day I did. Mm-hmm. I got sober in 2010. He got sober on the same day, October 18th. 1971, the year I was born, right? So he was an older dude. And I met him just in this community down where I wrote my first book, down in Oak Island, North Carolina, at a rental house. But when he died, his best friend, and he died at a ripe old age, 80-something, his best friend, Dick, Dick Beale, came, and he washed Morris's body when he died. He helped prepare the body for burial. Wow. And that's the old school way. So it is a process of being engaged with someone's life. And they were best buddies, man, best buddies. It's a process of being engaged with someone's life all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Not like I'm with you until it's uncomfortable for me.
Yes.
No. All the way to it. So if you're, And seeing my grandmother die, it was hard because it was tough, you know, until the very end. She was suffering, but I was with her all the way to the end. I did not love her and was there for her until it got uncomfortable for me. I was there the whole time. And that's the way I think people have to, they have to start looking at death like that with their elderly loved ones. You know, it sucks, but you got to.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this was, I'm going to share my aha with after reading that. So it brought me back in my mind and in my heart to watching my brother. So my brother died of addiction. He was 49. Yeah, I know.
One of my people.
Yeah. He would have loved you. But he's 49 years old. And going back to that moment of literally like feeling his last heartbeat, mm-hmm. it was like this wild, like, it's hard to describe, but just like honored to be there while right. his spirit left. Right.
Yes.
And so the aha was here. Let me, I'm scrolling because I wrote this down because I want to forget. It was your, you quoted Einstein. The energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed from one form to another. So right. it made me think about that. I was like, it's not that there's an end. It's not that there's a death per se, that that energy is just transferring from one thing to another, whatever that is. Yeah. And so I feel like, right, I mean, we're all, not to get all neuroscience geeky here, but we're 99.999% energy. We're all energy.
It's just yeah.
Like it's swimming in a big soup of energy. And to me, I felt like with my brother's passing, not much changed really. It's hard to say. Like, yes, his physical body is gone. It's in a little jar that I plan to put on the Camino de Santiago in right. Portugal. But his spirit, it's just another form. It just changes into something else, just like Einstein said.
Yeah, it's traveling eternally. Yeah. And I don't think with our limited human perceptions, we can really understand.
I know
where that energy transfers or what.
Yeah, you even talked about that too in the book. Like, who for you? I don't know. Like, no one really knows. Like,
nobody really knows.
Yeah, claim to know, but
there's this famous story from. Yeah. From Zen Buddhism, I talked about in the book, where this young monk goes up to the wise Zen master and he says, "Zen master, what happens after you die?" And the Zen master says, "I don't know." And he says, "What? Aren't you supposed to be a Zen master?" And he goes, "Yes, but I've never been a dead Zen master
yeah,
before."
Exactly. I know, right? Like,
and that uncertainty. You know, we were talking about the technology, I think, these computers we have, that unwillingness to accept uncertainty is increasingly problematic within our society because we have these computers in our pocket where we can Google everything. How do you bake, your favorite Portuguese dish? I can Google it. You know, what's the best fish stew? You know, and it's right there. But when it's like, what's going to happen next year if there's a financial collapse? There is no answer. We don't know, you know? And so,
I totally agree with you. I feel like a lot of people are fearful of uncertainty, of the unknown. Mm-hmm. That's why I feel like they do stay stuck in their uncomfortable comfort zones, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're like, oh my gosh, if I leap out of this thing and I – leave this shitty relationship or this job I don't like, or I start doing something else with my life. No, I'm just going to stay right here. Yeah.
Well, that's where the title of the book came from.
I was going to ask you that. Yes.
The title of the book came from that. I was reading something or watching a documentary. I can't remember which. And it was in August of 2016. And I have all these notes, and speaking of the phones, I have these random notes in the notes section of my iPhone, right? And some of them just make no sense when I look at them later, like, you know, go pick up a Run DMC shirt. Like, what does that mean? I don't own a Run DMC shirt. I have no idea where that came from, right? I have a lot of like fragments of lyrics and other little ideas, and there's one that just says Just Beyond the Light book title. And I remember, though, where that came from, because I was either reading something or watching a documentary. I cannot remember which. And they were talking about the history of the human race and how since early times, we're social animals. We gather together, and during the darkness night, we gather together around a campfire light since the caveman times because it keeps animals and predators away. And we gather and stay within this warm glow of the light, you know, within the campfire, the circle of the campfire light. And that's good. We all do that. But if we stay safe all the time within this circle of familiar comfort, it's really hard to grow or attempt anything great. And it's scary to step out beyond the campfire light.
To leave that nice, warm, cozy campfire.
It is scary. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are things out there, but there's also like awesomeness out there. So you have to be willing, I think, as a person to grow. If you're stuck in your life, you know, you have to look at these patterns of your life and say, what am I doing again and again and again and again that is providing the same result? What can I do differently? How can I break up this straightforward path I'm on? And you have to step outside the boundaries of your comfort zone and try things. And yes, the results are unknown. Like, you know, this book tour today is publication day. I'm going to a bookstore. I'm going to talk to my buddy Alex Skolnick from the band Testament over in Brooklyn. It's going to be great. And then I'm going to go on tour, and I'm going to do every night about a 2-hour spoken word show where it's centered around the themes of the book, but it's not stories from the book, because everybody that comes there is going to have a book. So they're just going to read the book later. I don't want to sit there and just read the book. And so I'm nervous. I'm very nervous about this. I've never gotten up and talked for 2 hours in front of everyone. I've been on stage in front of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, like a crowd of over 100,000 people. That's crazy. It's a sea, right? But on stage, I've been with my band for 30 years. I have my dudes with me. They are my security blanket. They're
campfire.
They're a really hairy, sweaty, middle-aged security blanket with a receding hairline, bad knees, and lower back issues, right? We're safe. We know what we can do, you know? It's easy, so I'm not nervous. This, I'm going to get up there and I'm not going to be having notes or anything. I'm going to go off the top of my head. It's scary. Yeah. It's something new. I don't know how it's going to go. Oh, no. You know? But I'll never know if I don't try, if I don't step out and try it.
As you know, midlife is a bustling time. We manage households, nurture relationships, advance careers, and raise children. These responsibilities, while fulfilling, can sometimes drain your energy and diminish your personal strengths. To help you reawaken those dormant powers and embrace the superhero that you truly are, I created the Superhero Quiz at mysuperheroquiz.com. This fast, free, and fun quiz will help you discover which superhero mirrors your strengths and personality. Plus, you'll receive a detailed guide tailored to your superhero profile, helping you to harness your strengths and soar to new heights. Just head over to mysuperheroquiz.com and embrace the superhero within you.
Is there anything that you say to yourself in those moments to get you to like, okay, let's go, let's do this? Anything that you say or do?
About 2 days ago, as relates to this tour, I was thinking, oh my God. And I've sent, like, I've practiced my whole thing, and I've sent these stories that I'm going to be telling to a stand-up comedian friend of mine. He's a professional stand-up comedian. Yeah. And I'm like, tell me if this sucks or what. He's like, it's awesome. You're going to kill it, dude. You just got to do it. So he's a really funny guy. So, you know, I know he would be honest with me. So I'm pretty confident that it's going to go really well. Right. But since I've never done it, I'm nervous. I'm scared. I'm like, this is sketchy. What if I'm catastrophizing before I left. I'm like, what if I get strep throat? What if my flights get canceled? What if I get up there? What if there's a snowstorm? And there are snowstorms hitting the first part of this. What if nobody shows up? What if? So I made up a little poem I was like washing dishes and I'm washing dishes, trying to like freaking out, like, oh my God, I have to go on book tour. And it goes like this. What's done is done. The die is cast. So let's hit the road and kick some ass. And that's what I'm saying to myself, like before I go on stage during this tour, because I don't know. I don't know how this, I don't know how this tour is going to go. I don't know how the book's going to do, you know?
Yeah.
I've done everything I can to promote this thing. I'm here talking with you. Thank you very much. I've done podcasts. I've done social media. I've done interviews. I've done all this stuff. It could flop. It could flop, you know? People could hate it. It could. But I'm never going to know unless I try, you know? So I have to be able to step outside my comfort zone and just try.
And so just enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm planning on having
fun. Just like you said earlier, like shit, like you're alive, you're breathing. Like
yeah. Yeah, this is not the end of the world, but I am a catastrophizer. You know, I can like draw a logical sequence of events in my mind as a child of the 1970s, like yourself.
Yeah.
And raised during the Cold War. I forget to go to the grocery store to pick up yogurt from my girlfriend and my brain kicks off and there is a logical sequence of events drawn that ends in the like just global nuclear holocaust. It's ridiculous because, and it's rude. That, let's face it, is narcissistic behavior, right? It's just the other side of the egomaniac coin.
Yeah. Because
even though I'm thinking all this negative stuff about me, what is the common denominator at the root of those thoughts? Me. And so it's like the social media algorithm. You know, the more I think about me, the worse it gets. You look at just one picture of a girl with a big butt and a bikini on the social media, and the next thing you know, your feed is wall to wall ass, right? My feed is negative and it's horrible. So mine is just wall to wall Armageddon, and you caused it. So I have to step away from that shit. I have to be like, dude, you're not that important. You're freaking out. Get right-sized, man.
Yeah.
And just do the best that you can.
Made me think about, well, there was the one chapter? I think it was called The War or something like that. Basically, like the war.
My war.
Your war, yes.
And my war. No, it's called my war. That's a black flag sign.
It's not your war. It's my war.
Well, you have your own war, trust me.
I have my own war, yeah. And I think what the two guys in your head were, what was the name? Mr. Dark.
The dark one who is
yes,
a dark one. And then Mr. Relentless Optimism.
Yes, that one. Yeah, that's funny. So how do you manage those guys?
Oh, I recognize trying to keep those guys, because I was writing about it. I'm not schizophrenic for anyone listening. I don't really have like
the. I mean, in some ways, we all kind of
are. We all are,
we
right?
We have these
we
voices, a little bit. You know,
I'm not having, like, there's not voices telling me you must do the podcast. I mean, you need medication if you're hearing outside voices. But
yeah.
I have two aspects of my personality that manifest. When I think when I'm dealing with particularly with unpleasant or stressful situations, and one is like this overly optimistic guy, like almost like toxically positive, like, yay, the world, it's a beautiful place. We have so much like happiness and love, and then there's so much progress. And he's just like, everything is great, positive mental attitude. And that's necessary. It is necessary to have a positive mental attitude, but there are real problems in the world too. And there are real injustices, and there are real things that if we're going to fix them, we have to at least acknowledge them. So being overly optimistic all the time, you know, if you were to hear your friend got assaulted on the street, you're not going to be like, yeah, you know, you're going to show some fucking empathy because that's fucked up. And it's upsetting.
Yeah.
Now on the other side, there's like this dark one, this dark person inside my brain who likes to isolate himself from the rest of humanity. He's really judgmental. He's really cynical. He sees, foul motives beneath everything. And that guy, you know, there is fucked up shit happening in the world. But that guy sucks too, because he doesn't see any of the good stuff. And so he is, you know, he's no fun at parties. Nobody wants to hang out with the constantly angry, bummed out guy who hates everything. I mean, and so these two characters, like, if something's like stressful or whatever, there's one guy who's just like, I know it, the world fucking sucks, and then there's the other guy who's like, it's not so bad, you're gonna be okay,
rainbows and sprinkles.
Yeah, exactly, it's like, you know, unicorns farting everywhere, like there's got to be a balance between those two guys. So yes, for me,
it's like the middle way.
Yeah.
Dealing with those guys is A, recognizing that those guys exist within myself, mm-hmm. and B, just kind of when I get overly excited one way or the other, recognizing that, you know, whatever this situation is, this too shall pass.
Yeah. So, I love that.
You know, no matter if it's bad, this too shall pass. If it's really good, this too shall pass. So this happiness, constant happiness, is not a sustainable state.
It's not realistic. No.
No, happiness is a transitory emotion. And then being bummed out all the time is not a sustainable state either, because you'll kill yourself eventually, you know?
Yeah. I think I had said earlier today, I think it was Instagram Live. And I had said, you know, we have 19 basic emotions as a human being. We are meant to experience all of these emotions, right?
Right.
You're a human being human. Like, just, it's normal. It's normal to have this positive and negative. It's the duality. It's the dichotomy of life. It's totally freaking normal. If you fight it, it's going to fight you back.
Yes.
But it made me think of, like, did you ever hear the tale of the two wolves, that story?
On each shoulder?
Yeah, that, or like, it, where the little boy went to the grandfather and the grandfather was saying that he has this like awful fight, this conflict going inside of him all the time, the two wolves.
Yeah. Which one do you feed?
Yeah, happy, angelic, peaceful wolf. And the other wolf is angry and mean, resentful. And the little kid said, well, which one wins? He said, whichever one you feed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of like you do want to feed both. You can't, like you said, you can't be all happy wolf all the time. You can't be all angry wolf all the time. And just, I don't know, for me, I have found in my life, it's just becoming aware of it. Being able to just listen and recognize it. Like, oh, there goes my critic again. There goes my cheerleader. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Got y'all, you know.
The critic and the cheerleader. Very real people.
Yep. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's normal. It's normal to experience all that.
It is. And I think for me, I think the older I get, I think I've dealt with some depression since I was a young kid. I was a very sensitive child who wanted everything to be okay and everybody to be okay, a great worrier. And then at a relatively young age, I learned that the world was not going to behave in a just and fair way all the time. So that made me upset and made me sad. And then feeling sadness for me kind of is like, I viewed it as wrong, I think, in some way. It's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I sad? Why am I feeling these feelings? And so I struggled against the fact that I would feel these feelings of sadness or, you know, being bummed out about things. It's like, why, you shouldn't feel that way. You know, that's bad. That's bad. And sort of repress that or masked it in anger, a lot of anger.
Yes.
So, I mean, basically that I was a walking middle finger for a long time. That was my entire existence. So I've come to, in midlife, trying to do the midlife makeover here, like I've come to, when I feel sadness now over the last, I don't know, it's been the last, like, I guess 5 to 10 years, it's really this, I say to myself, you know what, you're a little bummed out today, and you're a human being, and sometimes I'll be sad for no reason. No reason. And I used to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Just square yourself away, soldier, because I'm a fucking man, right? And that is not realistic. So now I'm just like, maybe you're just sad today because the chemicals in your brain, the electrical impulses are firing weird today. And it's going to be okay, dude, because this too shall pass. And just let myself feel it and be like, you're human.
Yeah.
Which is been hard for me to accept, which sounds so stupid because I'm almost 54 years old. And I'm like, dude, you're a human being. That sounds idiotic.
Yeah.
It's been a tough struggle.
Yeah. I used to really fight my bad days. Like I would try to turn it around. I'm like, yeah, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to. I mean, now I just like, yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just in a pissy mood. And I'd have there'd be no reason. I don't know why I just woke up on the wrong side of the bed, but it is what it is. Like, and I always like the next day I'm like, I'm fine.
Right. Yeah. And I think if you were continually like that, you are continually, don't get me wrong. It's I'm not saying like, just be bummed out all the time, because if you're continually just in distress and upset and I mean, the world right now is a fucking crazy place. So it's a lot of input that can really upset you. You know, that's okay. But if you're stuck in this like hopelessness, you need to evaluate that and take a look at those feelings and maybe get some help or you know, see what you can change in your life. But if you're just having a bad day, man, it's okay. Let it go.
Yeah.
I was stuck in, you know, I'm really sorry to hear about your brother. It breaks my heart.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Every time I hear that, because I said one of my people, and I cannot count on all five of these fingers, 10 fingers and 10 toes. I cannot count the amount of friends I have who are dead now in the music business alone, you know, from addiction.
Yeah. It's so, awful. Yeah.
Yeah. I was stuck in that and for but a you long know what, time though? And I felt hopeless.
I'm so grateful for him in so many ways. And his addictions, actually, like I've always said he's my greatest teacher in life.
Yes.
Because through his darkness, I learned more about light, actually.
Yeah.
And I'll have to tell you that the first time he went into a coma, I'll never forget this moment. And I walked over the threshold in the ICU. And my brother's like, huge, he was like 6'5", big guy. Mm-hmm. His like feet were hanging off of the bed. You know, he was so big. And I remember
those weird details you remember, right?
I know, right? The like, yeah, and the beeping and the machine.
That's the writer in you, by the way.
What's that? What'd you say?
That's the writer in you.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah. But I remember like walking over that threshold in the most, it was as that moment should be the worst moment, but it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. Because for the very first time, like, I just saw him, a soul with a body, not a body with a soul.
Right.
Like, all of his labels, the addiction labels, all of it. Like, there was none. He was just this beautiful soul. And I finally, like, not that I didn't have compassion for him before, I just really, really got it. It's like,
right.
I get it. Like, and we used to call each other dude, right? I'm like, I get it, dude. I fucking get it.
Right.
I know you, like, you're struggling so bad and your poor body is just like beat down.
Yeah.
But that to me, I felt like from that moment on, like as if I had rose colored glasses from that.
Right.
I could see more of people's struggles and challenges and that I understand. I mean, we all have, right? We all have a story. You have a story. I have a story. Everybody has a fucking story. And it's what you make of that story. Do the best that you can. And like you said earlier about what can you control? Like what, like the serenity prayer, right? The God.
Yeah, 100%.
Serenity, to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I would remind myself, I still remind myself of that. Like, what can I do?
May I ask you a question?
You may.
What was he addicted to?
Everything and then some.
Right?
It was like, yeah.
He's a garbage can like me.
Yeah, yeah. And probably since, not probably, since a teenager. Cocaine, alcohol, prescription drugs.
Yes.
He was sober for a few years, but he was still like popping the pills.
Oh, I did that too.
Yeah, he was head of AA. Actually.
I did that for about 4 or 5 years. I would quit drinking for, at one time, I think I made it to 3 months, right?
Yeah.
Because my ex, now ex-wife at the time, she had had enough of my nonsense because I'm coming home and I being an asshole, you know, and I can't drink when I'm around her. So I'd come off tour and not drink, but would still be eating. My favorite was pain pills, eating a lot of opiate pain pills.
Yeah.
It's a little placeholder. So I'm like, but at least I'm not drinking.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'm sober. Yeah. I'm like,
it's horseshit. So
yeah,
it's impossible. It's impossible for people who do not have this addiction for them to truly understand it. And I'm very glad to hear that you had a moment of understanding, because a lot of people never get there.
They never get there.
And I know, like my mom, right? She is so grateful that I am sober, clean and sober, you know? And she tells me, sweet Southern lady, she's like, I'm so grateful, honey. You're sober, you know, in her sweet Southern voice. But she doesn't understand it. I took years off her life of her worrying, you know, that I was going to die. Yeah. But she, and she understands that that's a real thing for me. But she can't understand it, because she at Christmas has a glass or two of wine and is like, ooh, that's enough. Yeah, I don't want to drink too much more. I don't like that feeling. And I'm like, you don't understand. You're just getting started. That's when the good stuff happens. Yeah. So we are at an atomic cellular level, different beings. So
yeah.
I'm glad you had that moment of understanding. That's a gift that a lot of people don't get.
Yeah. I feel bad for him. And my God, he really, really suffered. And probably the most high functioning addict I've ever met.
Right.
I mean, it's incredible. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah. I know people that functioned for a long, long time like that.
Yeah.
But then, like your brother.
Yeah. And actually my love for writing started right when he passed.
Ah.
So the creativity just started flowing.
Yeah. Well, we all process things in a different way. I've been through some really crappy stuff in my life, and I am not grateful that those things happened. I'm not like, yay, it's awesome that I went to prison in a foreign country, like, right? But I look at that and I'm like, well, that happened. What can I learn from this?
Yep.
What can I take from this? Because if I don't
choose again,
if I don't, it's a shame. Mm-hmm. What a waste. You know, what a waste of the human experience. The good, the bad, life in all its terror and glory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at any moment, you know, you can always choose again, and it's an opportunity to learn and to do something different. Right. Like, I love, by the way, the chapter was like, well, I guess it was right when COVID hit, you bought the land in, was it Ecuador?
Ecuador.
Yeah. I mean, how cool is that? So you're doing good shit for the world.
I'm trying, you know, that was like COVID hit. And my life was, personal life was in great turmoil at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond COVID, my professional life was in great turmoil because nobody was touring. And I, while my supposed title is professional musician, in fact, I am a glorified traveling black t-shirt salesman. That's how musicians make their money, is we sling cotton.
Not the Run DMC t-shirt, though.
No, not the Run DMC t-shirt. I still got to find it, whatever that means. I'm in New York City right now, so maybe I ought to go get one. I'll go down to Chinatown and get a bootleg. But my life was totally screwed up on multiple levels. And my job was basically gone. And, you know, I can't complain about that because a lot of people had it a lot worse. They lost their businesses and everything, and people died. So, but I was very unsettled, you know, very unsure. Things were very uncertain. And my buddy in Ecuador, who I'd been surfing with, is like, hey, man, this land is for sale and it's going to go and it's cheap right now. And, you know, I know now sucks in your life and everywhere, but it would be a good time to buy this. And I'm like, I was so mad that my buddy Carlos had sent me that, knowing how fucked up my life was personally and knowing how fucked up the world was. And I was like, Carlos, what the fuck, dude? Like, I love him, but I was pissed. Almost teared up. I was like, you can't add, like, you expect this of me? And then I thought about it and I was like, you fucking idiot. Now is the perfect time to do this. Now, when it's uncertain, this is when it matters, when you try to do the right thing. This is when it matters, when the rubber hits the road, when it gets hard, if you see an opportunity to do the right thing, do it now, you know, do it now. And I did. And it's a wonderful thing. And so we bought, I think I have something like the equivalent of like 30 football fields.
Worth that's you. Yeah. From singing on that was a Cameo or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I do Cameo. It's been turned off for the last couple of months because I've been
Dang it. Wait until November 27th. You're singing for me. Yeah. My birthday. Well,
no, it'll be back on before then. Y'all buy her by Wendy a Cameo. It'll be back on by then, but I've had to turn it off for book tour. But like, but I've been able to fund like this purchase of this land in Ecuador, which was former cattle land, by doing the Cameo thing and singing people happy birthday or whatever. And it's been wonderful. So, and we're trying to, you know, we've been able to employ some local people there because my friend Carlos is Ecuadorian. I can't just be this gringo guy that buys this land in Ecuador and it's like, look at me, I'm protecting the environment, because, you know, there's poor people there. You know, if you want to help the world and the community, you have to also help the humans within it. So we're trying to figure out a way to make this, you know, a valid form of like income for local people there. But yeah, it was very scary at first because I was like, I bought this land and it was, you know, it was cheap. Like it cost millions in America, but I got it for thousands. But it was a big chunk of my savings. And I was like, well, I'll just go on tour because COVID won't last forever. Right. And then we just didn't tour for like 2 years. I'm like, what the fuck? You know?
Nuts.
So like,
but you know what, I have found interesting for me in my experiences of like, should I do this? And there's that quote of leap and the net will appear. And I have found that once you leap, even if it's leaping into the unknown and the uncertainty, the net will appear. And really, to me, the net is you, right? You, like, it's trusting yourself that you'll figure this shit out. And when I feel like you do something, that if you listen to your heart, you listen to your soul, you just trust, like, the universe just rolls out this red carpet and like, okay, I got you. Like, the next thing comes in line and then that's taken care of and that's taken care of. And it's just relaxing and detaching from it all, knowing you'll figure it out.
Yes. And that is the big struggle in my head, is like just not trying to figure everything out in advance, because
the subtle art of not giving a fuck.
I don't have the answers. I just have to try. And the thing is, though, you know, it's like when someone's looking for a job and they're, I remember a friend of mine was looking for a job a while back and she was trying to get everything straight and like, I don't know what to do. I'm not qualified for this. I'm not qualified for this. I can't mm-hmm. do this. I can't do this. And just paralyzed. And I was like, you know what? You are guaranteed to not get 100% of the jobs you don't apply for.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Like, you are guaranteed that, you know, it's not going to work. So you just have to try sometimes. And it's, you know, you just got to go out and have a little faith in yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You have to.
Don't allow the dark one to take over.
That's right.
The dark one. Randy, you're so...
Dark one.
Yeah, there you go. You are so awesome.
Well, thank you. I think you're pretty dang gone awesome yourself. And I like your glasses.
Oh, yeah. Wait, look. Let me show you. This is so fucking cool. Ready for it?
Uh-oh.
Oh. I know. Aren't they groovy?
Yeah. They're getting thicker and thicker. Dark
one. I know, right?
I have these.
Dark. Oh, those are nice. Look at them glasses. I'm going for pink.
Yeah, there you
Bam!
Go.
Bam! So, yes, everyone, I mean, if it's not obvious, you need to buy the book. So good.
Please.
Hopefully I'll get to see you when I'm on my book tour. Hopefully I'll see you on your book tour. I'll be in Chicago in 3 weeks. And then who knows, wherever the RV takes me.
Yeah. You're going to be driving the RV around?
I'm driving the RV. You can come meet Felicia.
Sick.
That's her name. Yeah. Bye, Felicia.
I'll look up your tour dates. And if I'm around, I will for sure come out. And when does the book come out?
Let's see. Pre-order starts, I think, in a few weeks. And then pub date, as you know, the lingo, pub date.
Pub date.
Pub date is 9/9.
9/9.
9/9. It's this whole book thing. It's such a process.
It really is. And
talk about trusting the unknown and uncertainty and...
Right. Well, you have an established publisher, but I'll tell you, man, so do I. But in publishing, the world has been turned upside down by technology. And so we really have to.
We're the salesmen. We're like selling the t-shirts, right?
Yes. That's why I'm going on tour. Because, like, you know, I'm wondering how, like, you already have a built-in audience. You have your podcast audience. It does well.
Do you have a podcast?
No, I need to have one. I have a Substack.
I was thinking you'd be really good at it. You'd be awesome.
Yeah. I've got to do that in between being author and touring with Lamb of God. And being a photographer and the occasional acting gig, I got to fit in the podcast.
You can just podcast while you're surfing.
Well, yeah, surfing is my disconnect from everything. But no, it's like you really have to push yourself because the traditional routes of publicizing a book are disappearing. So
I know. So yeah, I want to remember your poem though, so I can say that when I go.
Okay, it goes.
You know, when I go on the Today Show.
Yes, what's done is done. The die is cast. Let's hit the road and kick some ass.
You got to say it like that. Kick some ass.
Kick some ass.
That's like the dark one comes in on that one. He's like, kick some ass.
That's right, baby.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful discussion.
Have an awesome, awesome book tour. I know you will kick some ass.
Gonna try my best.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.